Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, the Real Joe Quinn, recording this on a Thursday as we are, you know, thankfully, seemingly headed towards spring. Spring has seemingly arrived, but hopefully we'll go back to some of this back and forth weather. You know, it is March Madness, so you never really know with March. You never know with March. We got a lot to cover on this podcast. We're going to do, obviously, a ton of NBA, but also some NFL too, as we are getting closer and closer to the NFL draft, which is a little over a month away. We are in the midst of NFL free agency as well. Baseball season will be coming up. The conference tournaments for the NCAA, college basketball are absolutely in full swing. Duke, of course, lost tonight. I was kind of hoping that they will win so they can get to North Carolina on Saturday, and North Carolina can, you know, possibly get a number one seed. But North Carolina might get a number one seed regardless, as long as they win the ACC tournament. But teams, the rich get richer in more ways than one. We'll discuss that over the course of this podcast. We're going to begin with the deep dive, the NBA's defensive turn. So since the All-Star break, coming into last night, teams were scoring 4 points. Scoring was down. Teams were scoring 4 points a game less. So basically an average of 115 to an average of 111 in terms of the cumulative scores of these games. Free throw attempts are also down by 5.3 per game. We've seen some just crazy defensive games. There was a 90 to 86 game between the Clippers and Minnesota about a couple weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. Then, you know, Philadelphia and the Knicks, you know, a 79-73 game, like a little over a week ago. So there have been, so clearly the message was sent loud and clear to the NBA officials that, you know what, we need to calm down, you know, the scoring is a little bit out of control. We need to start the playoffs. Basically, start the playoffs now, and that's what's happened. These games are being officiated like playoff games, like right now. Okay, and again, I don't want to watch a game, frankly, in 2024 that's 79-73, and I don't want to watch a regular season game that's 90-86. To be honest with you, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm fine with great defense. I'm fine with not having 1,000 foul calls. But again, you know, you can complain if you're the NBA about the scoring. Coaches can complain. Everybody can complain. But what you don't want to do is go back to circa 2003, 2004, when teams were struggling to crack 90 points. We don't want to go back to that. We don't want to go back to that at all. Okay. And I don't want to hear any complaining. If this trend continues, I don't want to hear shit about, okay, oh, wait a minute, this is too much defense. I was fine with the regular season. I was fine with the scoring. I told you about a month ago, I told you the skill level of these players is out of this world right now. Like the offensive skill sets of some of these players is at an all-time high. Is positionless basketball. It's almost impossible to guard these guys right now, period. All these guys can euro step, step backs, counters on top of counters, jump shot, you know, unlimited 3-point range. It is almost impossible to guard these players right now. Do I like a game with a million foul calls? Of course not. But for the most part, I'm gonna be honest with you, the flow of these games were fine with me. I didn't walk away thinking about a lot of these games where it was a situation where, oh man, I think it's too many foul calls. It's not too many games I watched this season and walked away feeling that way or complaining about the officiating. Now listen, the officiating has not been good this year, but that has nothing to do with the uptick in offense. Like those are two separate issues. Like the officials have not just been good, period, with consistency and quick technical fouls and what have you. Some blatant missed calls. But that has nothing to do, like I said, that has nothing to do with this outburst of offense that is at an all-time record rate in the NBA. So again, listen, you want to start the playoffs now? Cool. Playoffs start in April. Look, listen, this is all you're watching. All you're watching right now is how officials are going to ref the play, are going to officiate the playoffs. And you couldn't tell you you're telling me you couldn't wait. People who are complaining couldn't wait till April. So middle of April for this to happen. You couldn't wait till April. I mean, really? I mean, that's because this is, I mean, this is how the games are going to get officiated in April through June. And normally you see less foul calls and scoring goes down in the playoffs. So I don't really have a major problem with it. A lot of these games have felt like playoff caliber games, over the last week or so. Again, I don't want to see a game. I don't want to see a situation where we're getting the games are played in the 90s over the course of the regular season. Like, I don't want to see that at all. The question, here's the big question, right? What happens when we get to the playoffs? Does this trend continue? Will we see even more, less foul calls, more physicality? And who does that favor? Which teams are going to be the biggest beneficiaries of this moving forward once we get to April? That's the question. So, listen, the NBA got his wish. Joe Dumars, Adam Silver, what have you, and a couple coaches got their wish. The scoring has definitely been noticeable over the past couple, since the All-Star break, and especially since March started. It's been very noticeable as far as the scoring going down. Again, what is this going to look like when April comes? Couple things around the NBA, and this is why you can't trust the Los Angeles Clippers. Kawhi left a game with a back injury, a loss to Minnesota. They were in control of the game when he was in, and Minnesota, Anthony Edwards just exploded in the fourth quarter, and Minnesota ran away with the game a couple nights ago. He left with a back injury that apparently was so bad that he couldn't sit down and left the arena. And there's no – anytime Kawhi, coughs the wrong way, you have to be nervous you're a Clipper fan, period. Like this, so there's no such thing as a minor injury when it comes to Kawhi Leonard. Now, this year, he has been, for the most part, relatively healthy this year. He's played in a ton of games, should be eligible to probably make the he should reach probably – I don't know, depending on how long he's going to be out now, but was on pace – to reach that 65 game mark, that can have him eligible for like possibly first team all NBA and some of the awards that are connected with those with that threshold, and which should make the awards interesting as well, because there are going to be some spots open, because you're going to have some all NBA caliber guys who are going to be eliminated because they haven't reached that 65 game that 65 game max to make first team all NBA and to win some of these awards, these postseason awards. But if you're a Clipper fan, it's here we go again with Kawhi. Like I don't, like I said, there's no such thing as a minor injury with him. It's something that you're going to have to monitor throughout for the rest of the season. And again, he already had leg injuries, so like a back is the last thing that Kawhi needs. With his already injury riddled history of his career. And again, Clippers, something was going to happen with the Clippers. It always does. Injury. Like, when is the last time? I mean, matter of fact, when is the last time Kawhi played a full postseason? I mean, Kawhi hasn't played. Don't look this up now, but Kawhi. I don't think Kawhi has played in a full postseason since the bubble. Since the bubble in 2020. And I'm looking it up right now. But listen, the guy can't stay on the floor. He cannot. I mean, he cannot stay on the floor. Looking at his basketball reference now. And again, if you're Ty Lue, it's like, what can you do? Like, what, you know, it, you know, you have to, you know, resort to, you know, with these different lineups, you have to resort to just being being accustomed to not playing with this dude. All right, so Kawhi playoffs 2020, yeah, 13 games he got eliminated. 21, he played. That's when he got hurt against Utah. And last year he only played two games, and of course he went out with that knee injury. So has not played a full playoff season since 2020. Since 2020, he has not played a full yeah hasn't played in a full playoffs. He had back to back. But they won a championship. He wins a championship with Toronto, played 24 games. Of course, he won the NBA Finals MVP. The following year, played in the bubble. Even going back to 2017 with the Spurs, he got hurt. Remember, with Zaza Pachulia went under him and, you know, he messed his ankle up. So he has not been healthy in the playoffs for the most part. Like, they won the championship in 14. They lose a seven game. He lost a seven game series when he was with San Antonio in 15 to the Clippers. Then 2016, they made it to the semifinals and lost. And he had been relatively healthy up to that point. But of course, 2018, he had the injury where he didn't play at all. He's only played in his career. He's only played 137 playoff games in his career. He's been in the league since 2011. And in the last three. You know, the last 4 years, he has only played 26 playoff games in the last 4 years. Since 2020, he's only played in 26 playoff games. So, again, I just can't trust the Clippers. You can't trust them. Something is going to happen. It never fails, and there's no way. Like I said, between he and Paul George, there's no way that I would ever bet that they could make it through an entire playoff run without something happening, especially when it comes to injuries. And again, that they were probably going to be Denver's biggest, as far as matching up. I still think it's Minnesota from a matchup standpoint with this Minnesota size, but from an experience standpoint and from a standpoint of depth, the Clippers probably would be one of the tougher matchups, if not the toughest matchup. For the Denver Nuggets, and you know, even with that said, Denver has owned the Clippers since the NBA, since the bubble in 2020. So even healthy, you would favor the Clippers. You would favor Denver in that series. But now it's kind of like, you know, well, is next team up? Like, who's the question is who's going to be playing Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, and who's going to be the biggest threat to them? And right now, in terms of matchup, you probably have to say the Minnesota Timberwolves, especially if they get Karl Anthony Towns back before the playoffs, which they should, that they probably are the biggest between them and maybe the Lakers. So the West, which at one point looked deep, really, and when you look at the Western Conference, it, you know, things are really clearing up for Denver right now because, Oklahoma City is young. The Clippers are beat up. You look at, you never know with Minnesota. Like Minnesota, again, they're banged up as well. Karl Anthony Towns should be back, but they still, you know, they have a tough time closing down the stretch in games, especially as with Anthony Edwards, fourth quarter scoring. But I still think Minnesota is their toughest matchup. Do you trust New Orleans? Do you trust Sacramento, Dallas, Phoenix? No, I mean, I just don't. So I think, you know, I think right now, Denver's number one right now, and they would face, you know, they could face the Lakers, they could face Phoenix in the first round. I don't know. I honestly don't think it matters who Denver plays in the first round, to be honest with you. But it's Dallas, Phoenix, LA, Golden State. I don't think it matters. I don't. And then the way it's set up right now, Clippers and New Orleans are 4-5. I mean, Denver to me has probably a clear path to the Western Conference Finals. They really do. Like, it's not as tough as I thought that it was going to be for Denver to get back. It's thought that the West is just not as tough as it looked a couple of weeks ago. And a lot of it has to do with inexperience at the top, but also injuries. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, Kawhi Leonard, You know, LeBron with his ankle, who knows about that from that standpoint? And you got three teams that just can't be trusted. The Clippers, the Pelicans, and the Kings. You can't trust these teams. You can't, especially in key playoff moments, fourth quarter games where they get down to a possession here, a possession there. Denver is clearly heads and shoulders above everybody in the Western Conference. You know, separate themselves. They've won 9 out of their last 10 games. Jokic is going to win another MVP, to me. So, you know, there you go with the Western Conference from that standpoint. You know, I was ready to get back on the Milwaukee bandwagon. They had a great win against coming off the break. They started out like 6-0 coming off the break. Had a great win against the Clippers, against Minnesota on the road, and then against the Clippers. But they went on a West Coast trip, and it was an absolute disaster. They got destroyed. They get destroyed by, absolutely manhandled in a couple of these games. They were outscored an average of 123-107. So the defense completely regressed on that West Coast trip. And, you know, they lose a 1-point game to the Lakers with no LeBron. That was a horrible loss. They get absolutely smoked by the Kings and got destroyed. And this was the worst loss. They got destroyed by the Golden State Warriors, which was a horrible loss. And that game wasn't even close. So Milwaukee, when you thought Milwaukee was on his way to possibly making a run, not at the Celtics in terms of catching up a number one seed, but when you thought that they possibly had somewhat turned the corner, they're playing great defense. They have certainly taken another step back. 1-3 coming off that West Coast trip. I know they're winning tonight as we speak, as I'm recording the podcast. They're winning, but they're struggling against a Sixer team without Joel Embiid. I think Milwaukee, yeah, they're going to win this game. But again, the Sixers, you know, don't have Joel Embiid, and so it's a game that they absolutely should win. By the way, and you know, just you know, with Milwaukee, listen, here's what it comes down to with Milwaukee. And I said this before the season. You know, everybody's focused on the Lillard and Giannis chemistry, and you know, their pick and roll and all this other stuff. Milwaukee coming into the season was going to come down to one guy, and that was Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton either has been ineffective or can't get on the floor or can't stay on the floor. That's all there is to it. When they won a championship in 2021. You had basically a three-headed monster of Giannis, Drew Holiday, and Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton won them a few playoff games. He had a 40-point finals game. Okay. He's playing at an all-star caliber level in that playoffs. He had a great, excellent playoff run in 2021. That version of Chris Middleton is done. And they needed somebody. They needed, you know, giving up the defense with Drew Holiday. They needed, and you know, DiVincenzo, that hurt as well. But they needed it about 85-90% of what Chris Middleton was in 2021. And right now, that this version of Chris Middleton is just not good. It's not gonna work. It's not gonna, like, he, you know, like I said, he either can't stay on the floor or he's been, you know, basically a non-factor when he's been on the court. You know, he's had a moment. He's kind of been like the Eastern Conference version of Klay Thompson in some ways, in terms of what he used to be. I mean, that's how poorly he's played. And that was what the Bucks was going to, that was what their season was going to come down to. If Chris Middleton could return to form of where he was at a couple of years ago, they would be in excellent shape. If he couldn't, they had no chance. They have absolutely no chance to get to the finals, to even get out the Eastern Conference without Chris Middleton. So you can talk about Giannis and Damian Lillard and that their chemistry all you want, the lack of defense. No, it is about this. The key to the Bucks is Chris Middleton. I know what I'm getting out of Giannis. I know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get out of Dame Lillard, even though he hasn't played as well as he was expected to. But still, I mean, he's still producing at an all-star caliber level. Still to be clutch in fourth quarter games and still capable of getting you on a given night 35 to 40 points on a given night. And he's not going to shy away from any big shot or big moment. So Damian Lillard is fine. I'm fine with Damian Lillard. You know, that's not the problem. The problem is Chris Middleton, is the fact that they've had no Chris Middleton. That's the problem with the Bucks. Even that between that and their just lackluster, just effort and concentration on defense, which is, you know, again, they should not have been this bad defensively. They just shouldn't have. But the key, even with their defense improving, you know, in the fourth quarter, you get in these playoff games, you need playmakers you need guys that can create offense and guys that can get buckets in the fourth quarter. And again, you watch Chris Middleton 2021, it was the guy that can get his own offense, can create for other people, and it can get buckets in the fourth quarter. Chris Middleton was not afraid to take big moments and to take big shots in the fourth quarter during that, especially during that 21 run to a championship. He had some huge games, some big time games, especially you remember when Giannis went out in that Atlanta series. They won the last two games without Giannis. Okay, they won games 5 and 6 without Giannis. And then, you know, you get to the finals. He had some big games in the finals. So, you know, Milwaukee is not going to happen. It looks just not going to happen for them this year. I thought they were on their way back, but they just too much going on with them right now. I don't think that they can turn it around all of a sudden. And we get to April and you know, here comes Milwaukee. Now, again, anytime you still have Giannis, you still, you know, at worst, the second best player in the world. So you're always going to have a chance with that guy on your team. But I don't see it happening for Milwaukee. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had another early exit. They maybe can win can win one round and then get put out in the second round. I would not be surprised if Milwaukee went out. I would not be shocked if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals. At this point, I'll be a little bit surprised if they do make the Eastern Conference Finals. And the East is not very strong, to say the least. We don't know what's going to happen with Philadelphia in terms of Joel Embiid. And again, in a series against Miami, you're picking Miami. I'm just saying, this is Milwaukee versus Miami. You are absolutely picking Miami. That's all there is to it. As far as the NFL free agency goes, a very interesting week of free agency, to say the least, especially at the quarterback spot. First, let's start with Russell Wilson, because I got a lot on Kirk Cousins. Russell Wilson going to Pittsburgh for a minimum deal is a perfect signing for Pittsburgh. You get Russell Wilson absolutely on the cheap. They got rid of Deontay Johnson. It's not a big deal. I came on here and said that I wouldn't pick up Russell Wilson because I don't think he can take you over the top. But if you need a quarterback and you're saying, hey, you're only going to play, I'm only going to pay him like $1.2 million, then that's too hard to pass up. Because now he could be a guy that can lead you to your next big time quarterback, or to your next possible franchise quarterback. Like he can be that guy. Is he going to lead Pittsburgh to a championship or to even a conference championship? No, it's not going to happen. Especially in the AFC. The AFC is loaded with top quarterbacks. But if you're Pittsburgh, he bought you another year. So I have no problem with that. I actually like this deal for Pittsburgh more than I like the next deal in terms of who I'm going to mention next for Atlanta. Kirk Cousins gets 4 years, $180 million. Kirk Cousins, I don't know what his religious affiliation is, but he has to be living right. Kirk Cousins is going to end up making $250 million in salary and possibly in total of $400 million possibly in career earnings. This is a guy who was drafted in the fourth round of 2012 draft. This is a guy who has one playoff win in his career, okay? And I know he's put up some excellent numbers. He's been very productive. He's made a Pro Bowl. He's a very good player. He would be in the Hall of very, very good. But he's not a guy that's going to move the needle, that's going to take your franchise to another level. We understand what the ceiling is for Kirk Cousins. But give his agent all the credit in the world. Give him all the credit in the world. He has played his cards perfectly when it's come to contract negotiations. Now, for Atlanta, I totally don't understand why you signed Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins does not put you in the maybe you might make the playoffs. You might make the playoffs, but he definitely doesn't put you in the conference championship or let alone the Super Bowl. He just doesn't do that. Now, could Kirk Cousins get them a division title? Sure. That division is going to be wide open until another quarterback emerges. And you look at the division right now at the current state of it, he probably pound for pound is the best quarterback in the division. But that's not hard to be because none of those teams, Tampa, New Orleans, Carolina, right now really have a quarterback. And all due respect to Bryce Young, I got to see, we'll see him when he's standing up straight. I know he got destroyed with his offensive line this year, but being the best quarterback in that division doesn't mean much because it's not a quarterback laden division, to say at least. It's one of the worst quarterback divisions in the NFL right now. I would not give it again. There's no way in the world I would have signed Kirk Cousins if I'm Atlanta. It makes zero. It would have made more sense for them to go after Russell Wilson or just go the route of a journeyman guy on the cheap that you can use as a stopgap to get to your next guy. I'm not giving Kirk Cousins like what Kirk Cousins gets. I'm not treating Kirk Cousins like he is the next guy that he can put us over the top. They gave him the money that he got. You're paying a guy that you're saying that we're basically a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender. That's the money Kirk Cousins got. And there's no way that I'm giving Kirk Cousins that type of contract. And to put it in perspective with Kirk Cousins' possible career earnings of over $400 million, that is more than Kevin Durant and the late Kobe Bryant. Now, you don't count endorsements because certainly with endorsements, both of those would probably be Kobe, Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant would far exceed the $400 million if you include endorsements. But just based off contractual salaries, he has a chance to make more than both Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant. Two of the top probably 20 players Garnett probably having that 20 or 25 range, or maybe that 15 or 20 range. But two of the top 20 players, 15 players, two of the top 20 players in NFL and NBA history, right? That Kirk Cousins is going to exceed in career earnings. Late in the words of the great Don King, only in America. Only in America. Only in America. And I'm not calling Kirk Cousins mediocre, but boy, you talk about overachieving and winning in life and professionally, like Kirk Cousins is out here winning. Y'all can say what y'all want about Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins came, like I said, he came in the draft with the Heisman Trophy winner, right? Far outplayed him, RG3. Far outplayed him. And again, it's just continuously signs big contracts. So I'm not mad at him. He's taking advantage of the opportunities. So the biggest winners of the free agents. Let's go through a couple of free agents. Saquon Barkley goes to Philadelphia. 3 years, $37 million. It's not about the money. Can Saquon stay on the field? And I think for the most part, Saquon Barkley has probably been more durable than I actually have given him credit for. So yeah, I mean, he has been a little bit more durable than what you think when you look at the games played versus the games missed. But to me, I'm not paying a running back. I'm just not paying a running back like that. It's too easy to find a running back in draft and over the course of the NFL. I'm just not. Especially a guy who has had some injury issues. So from that standpoint, I don't like the move to Philadelphia. I don't hate it, but it's kind of like one of those, did you have to make this move? Did you have to do this? So if he's healthy, if he's on the field, then he has a chance to be dynamic. He has a lot of wear and tear on him, even in his short career. He hasn't had a long career, but he has a lot of wear and tear because he plays – he's a tremendous receiver as well as a running back. So he's going to be, you know, he's kind of like a somewhat of a similar, a poor man's version of Christian McCaffrey. So if he's on the field, he's going to be productive, and he can catch balls out the backfield as well. But again, he has a lot of mileage for a guy that's only 27 years old. And Calvin Ridley goes to the Titans. 4 years, $92 million, $50 million guaranteed at signing. I completely don't understand what the hell the Titans are doing. The Titans, now they're going to draft a quarterback, but they still don't have a quarterback. And I'm not overpaying a receiver when I don't have a quarterback. Like Calvin Ridley is a very good player. He's not a top receiver in the NFL. He's not. I'm sorry. I'm just not. Calvin Ridley's a nice player. He's slightly above average receiver. He is not a game changing. He's not a guy that's going to elevate you offensively. He's not that caliber player. And for Tennessee to bring him in with no quarterback to me I don't know what that franchise is doing right now. The owner is absolutely running them into the ground. They were in the conference championship a couple of years ago. They had one of the top young coaches in the NFL. We talked about what happened with Vrabel. He's done, of course, he's gone. And now you have no quarterback. And now you overpay a receiver who, again, is not a guy that's going to move the needle for you if you're that franchise. That was, to me, is a horrible signing and made zero sense. Made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But that's what happened that's what happens with these teams in free agency. You don't want to get to free agency and have to be dependent on picking up these players. Most of the players are either over the hill or coming off injuries these are good players, but these are not players that are going to like change your, for the most part, going to change the trajectory of you being able to compete for Super Bowls and win playoff games. So free agency always can be dangerous, and it can, more times than not, it can be hit or miss. You see a lot of bad deals in the NFL free agency, a lot of bad deals. And again, I don't like, the Ridley one is ultimately a head scratcher. I mean, Kirk Cousins makes more sense than Ridley. At least Kirk Cousins is a quarterback. Like at least you're paying a productive quarterback who has put up some big numbers and, you know, has made the playoffs a couple times. So you can talk yourself into that from that standpoint. You can talk yourself into saying, hey, maybe, you know, in the NFC, that's kind of wide open that we can make a surprise run. Okay. There's no talking yourself into this move with Calvin Ridley. I'm sorry. There's absolutely no talking yourself into that whatsoever. It made zero sense. Good news for Tennessee, if there's any light at the end of the tunnel, is only a $3.9 million cap hit in the first season. Maybe that was for Barkley. That was for Saquon Barkley. That actually wasn't for Ridley. So from that standpoint, it's no good news in terms of that signing. Who won the week? The Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it's not even close from an NFL standpoint. Kansas City Chiefs. First of all, you have Mahomes restructuring his contract to free up $21.6 million in cap space. Okay, they were able to franchise Legarius Sneed, who's part of one half of probably the best cornerback duo in the NFL in terms of Trent McDuffie, who's All Pro this year. You sign Chris Jones, one of the best defensive players in the league. Okay, you get him locked up for the foreseeable future. And now you have other moves to make, possibly small moves, no big moves, but they're going to come back with their core, and they're going to be favored to go to and win a third straight Super Bowl. And, you know, they clearly had the best free agency. It's not even close. Like, listen, give Mahomes a lot of credit. He wants to win championships. Brady used to do the same thing with New Orleans. And, you know, Mahomes is going to make up that money easily. He's in a million State Farm commercials. He's the face of the league. So he understands the game. He understands the law. He understands that money is going to get that money on the back end. So, and he's only what? He's 27 years old. He's going to sign another mega contract before it's said and done. Like he's going to like this guy is going to sign a when it's all said and done, he will be probably the highest paid player in NFL history as far as total, as far as career earnings when it's said and done. But he's smart to know that, hey, if you want to keep this thing going, if I want to catch Brady or come close to catching Brady, win five, six, maybe possibly seven Super Bowls, this is what has to be done. He understands that as a, you know, we have a excellent team. We draft well. We have a ton of talent, and he understands that they're going to probably have to upgrade their receiving core. So they clearly won the free agency thing. I don't think it's even close. Like they clearly won it. So Kansas City wins the week, in regards of the regards to free agency and just all around. Hello, real thoughts before I let you go. So Aaron Rodgers, it came out this week that he was one of the choices of to be a vice president candidate from Robert Kennedy Jr. The other one, of course, was Jesse Ventura, the governor of Minnesota. Rodgers, of course, is, you know, this makes all the sense in the world, you know, anti-vaxxer. He's been on that tip, conspiracy theorist, Robert Kennedy Jr., who is a just absolute basket case. The guy's a nutcase, to say the least. You know, just is basically living off a name, has no political skill and whatsoever. He's just like basically he's just a Kennedy. That's it. He's living off a name. I can see why Aaron Rodgers has only one Super Bowl. So you could be a you can't have a combination of so many bad characteristics, right? So he's a clear narcissist. He doesn't add energy to a team, can kind of take the life of out of a team, which he did with Green Bay at times. Doesn't uplift, like he doesn't inspire people around him. Now, Aaron Rodgers is one of the most talented quarterbacks ever. So you have to respect his skill set just off his talent alone. This guy's a four-time MVP, all-time great quarterback, without question, top, you know. Probably top 10 quarterback of all time. There's no doubt Aaron Rodgers' ability. There was a period where a 45-year period, he was the best player in the league. So this is not even about his ability. But when it comes to winning championships and playing a game at the highest level, you look at the guys who have won championships at the highest level and their character. Now, Brady is a MAGA guy. Brady, if you look it up, Brady has worn, supports Donald Trump. He's worn the Make America's Great hat. In a locker room on camera. I've seen it. So I'm not saying that supporting that, you know, right wing shit, that you can't be successful in sports. Like there are a number of guys that like that. No, I'm not saying that. But Brady, not a narcissist. I didn't hear too many bad things that were said. Did you hear any bad things that were said about Brady during his time in New England and Tampa? Like Brady came into a room, he uplifted the room. Guys were inspired by his work ethic, TB12, all that. He even had guys working with him. It probably caused a split between him and Belichick, because he had guys doing on his workout program regimen. But you never like Brady was not ever a divider or somebody that took the life out of a room. Never heard that about Brady. And with Rodgers, again, it's too much. Is you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a narcissist. You don't really, again, I've heard a number of ex-teammates completely knock Aaron Rodgers. No one says good things about this dude. They're very consistent in terms of what they say. Say, hey, great player, talented, but when you're that talented, and when you've had that much success as he's had, there's not supposed to be a but there is with Aaron Rodgers. And now I can see with how he with how with the type of character he has, now I can see why he only won one Super Bowl. Like I can really see why now. And again, Aaron Rodgers is out there, you know, on Pat McAfee's show. He's out there talking shit every week. Every week he puts himself in like again, clout chasing as well. He does stuff for attention. He says shit for attention. He makes it about him. Even his on the field play, and we talked about this with Robert Sapp during podcasts in the past. Not throwing interceptions. That was a big deal for him. It's not so much about the team, but it was about, hey, I don't want that. I don't want those interceptions on my record, on my stat line. Lincoln, you rarely heard Aaron Rodgers take accountability. Rarely for his play, for the offense, or for when he came up small in big games. Rarely. Again, if you're going to be a quarterback at the highest level and win championships, you can't have all those, like there has to be a singular focus. And again, you have to be somebody that uplifts a team. Patrick Mahomes uplifted a team. John Elway uplifted, inspired a team. I mean, for all, and he's a piece of shit as well, but Brett Favre uplifted his team. He's turned out to be a piece of shit. We understand what he did, Mississippi, stealing from poor people. And he's on that MAGA shit too. But during the time he was there, it was about football. He was an alcoholic as well. I mean, he had one vice. He was an alcoholic, which is not great. But Aaron Rodgers has about three or four things that are poor characteristics. Even with the alcoholism, right? And the dick pics that he sent that was at the end of his career. That's when he was a Jet. He was done. But you never heard people during Brett Favre's career, when he's winning MVPs and going to back-to-back Super Bowls, you never heard his teammates complain about him. They always would say, like, Brett, we love Brett. We'll run through a wall for Brett. So even he, with some of the shit that he had going on, was able to uplift the locker room, not suck the life out of it. One last thing, I'll let you go. So the draft is coming up. And there's already potential for this to be a draft where teams are going to just absolutely just shit the bed as far as chasing these quarterbacks. We saw this in the 2021 draft in the last couple of years. Look at that draft class. It has not aged well. Mac Jones traded, okay? Trey Lance traded. Zach Wilson. Justin Fields, we talked about how his trajectory is going. He's going to be traded. And Trevor Lawrence. Now, I still believe in Trevor Lawrence, but even he has underachieved to where he should be, considering he was considered to be a generational franchise, generational talent coming out that draft. So that draft class has been some shit. And part of the reason why is some of those guys should not have been drafted in the first round, period. And these teams, I heard J.J. McCarthy from Michigan is going to possibly be a top five pick. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I watched a number of Michigan games. They won a championship this year. But when I watched them play, I didn't think J.J. McCarthy was the reason why they actually won games. I thought they were great defensively. They had a bruising, powerful running game. And that was that. Like, J.J. McCarthy would make some plays and he would, not make a critical mistake. And I know he put up excellent numbers, but I didn't think of J.J. McCarthy as a quarterback that I didn't even think of him as an NFL quarterback, to be honest with you, to be perfectly honest with you. But, if you told me that you wanted to take J.J. McCarthy in the third or fourth round, cool. But J.J. McCarthy, a first round pick, a possible top 10, top five pick, like teams, like they have projections that have Minnesota trading up to get him. And I'm like, ooh. That's how franchises get set back like 4 to 5 years. Like Josh Rosen was taken in 2018 by the Arizona Cardinals. Josh Rosen. Okay. Yeah, Josh Rosen. So these teams, chasing these quarterbacks. If there's any question marks about a guy, I'm not taking him in the first round. Sorry. I'd just rather build the rest of my roster up and take a chance on a quarterback in the second, third, or fourth round. I don't take chances on quarterbacks in the first round. That is how easily you will set your franchise back 3 to 4 to 5 years. And again, there's no one coming out, even Caleb Williams, who's probably going to be the number one pick. But even he, there's no short, there's no Andrew Luck, there's no Peyton Manning. Like there's no it guy out there coming out right now that says that we say will be a surefire franchise quarterback guy. That guy is not in draft right now. So teams are gonna, there have been, I've seen projections of as many as 4 to 5 quarterbacks could be taken in the first round. And I'm like, I didn't see 4 to 5 first round caliber quarterbacks playing college football this year. I'm sorry, I didn't. I watched Bo Nix. I watched, I watched a number of quarterbacks, Caleb Williams. I watched the guy, the Carolina kid, Drake May. I'm sorry, I didn't see that caliber quarterback playing college football this year. I didn't. I'm not even, again, I'm not even big on Caleb Williams, being perfectly honest with you. So teams gotta be, you gotta be careful. Teams gotta be careful with chasing these quarterbacks in the first round. I'm telling you, it is, it goes wrong. Your best bet, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, some of those guys have, some of the best bets have gone second and third round, have gone in the second and third round. Period. Pittsburgh, they're already off Kenny Pickett. They fucked up on him a couple years ago in 2022. They could have had, who the Steelers could have had instead of Kenny Pickett? Trent McDuffie. Think about that. You pass up on, you draft a quarterback who you are, who within 2 years you're already off him. You bring in Russell Wilson, who's going to start, and you pass up on a guy who's now an all-pro cornerback and one of the best young quarterbacks in the league, and Trent McDuffie. So, these teams will continue to make mistakes at the quarterback. I know it's, I know it's a, as a, it's a absolute inexact science. There's no, but it's very simple to me. If I don't believe that this guy is going to be a franchise championship title quarterback, caliber quarterback, then I'm going and drafting another position where I could, where I can have a player impact start on day one, helping my franchise to get to the next level. And I'll eventually will find a quarterback. But you can't force a quarterback in the NFL draft. It doesn't work. Chase, you cannot chase quarterbacks in the draft in the NFL, because history tells us that it has not worked. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. So long.